Reading from Mark chapter 14, beginning at verse 61. Again the high priest asked him, "Are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed One?" "I am," said Jesus, "and you will see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven." Oh, listening friend, I'm glad you've tuned in for today's edition of Mark and Friends. The Monday edition is today you're going to hear from Nikki Gumbel talk about who is Jesus. He'll lay out some historical evidence that he existed, the validity of these documents, who did Jesus think he was, and what did Jesus say about himself, and was he right? I hope you can stay with me throughout today and tomorrow's broadcast, as I believe Nikki Gumbel presents a real well-thought-through an effective approach of helping us all better understand who is this Jesus. It may in fact be a life-changing message for you. Let me also thank Alpha International along with Alpha USA, which can be reached at alphausa.org, alphausa.org if you have questions, want more information, or want to purchase this series. And I also must say, this is not the Alpha in its entirety. Alpha is a series of interactive sessions exploring the Christian faith, typically including food, a short talk, and discussion in small groups where you can share your thoughts. This broadcast series was produced by Alpha International, copyrighted Alpha International 2014, and in particular this message, "Who is Jesus?" is copyrighted 2007 by the Alpha Course. Here's Nikki Gumbel, founder of the Alpha Course.
For much of my life, I've not been a Christian. My father was Jewish by race, agnostic really by conviction. My mother was not a churchgoer. So growing up, I was not a churchgoer, and I became really an atheist. And I found the whole subject, really, of Christianity and religion very boring. I wasn't interested in it, and I just thought it was completely irrelevant to my life. My first year at university, I was sharing rooms with a guy called Nicky Lee. And I'd said to Nicky, because I'd kind of come across Christians in my year off, and I was deeply suspicious. I never understood why they smiled so much. And I said to Nicky, you know, whatever you do, don't let them in your room. But I was too late, because he came back, he and his then girlfriend, now his wife, Scylla, and they told me that they had become Christians. And I was horrified. I mean, they were such lovely people. And I thought, you know, what's happened? They've joined some cult. I better help them. But I thought, I don't really know how to help them because I know nothing about it. So I better read up on the subject. I better read up on philosophy and religion. The only thing that I could find, because it was quite late at night, the only thing that I could find in my room was an old Bible I'd had for RE at school. So that night I started reading it. And I read all the way through Matthew's Gospel, all the way through Mark, all the way through Luke. I got about halfway through John's Gospel when I fell asleep. And the following morning I carried on reading. I read all that day, all the next day, all the next day. I was a student, I didn't have any work to do. And when I got to the end of the New Testament, I came to the conclusion, it's true. And what I want to look at tonight is why. What is the evidence? I don't believe that you can prove Christianity kind of like a mathematical proof, or a scientific proof, or even a philosophical proof. But it's based on evidence. More like historical evidence, more like the kind of evidence in a legal case you might put before a jury. I spent 10 years studying law and practicing as a barrister, so for me personally, evidence is very important. I don't think I could just take a kind of blind leap of faith. For me, it's a question of taking a step of faith based on good historical evidence, life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Sometimes people say, but hang on a second, I don't even believe there's a God. Why are we suddenly talking about Jesus? That's what I believed. I thought, because I was an atheist, there was no point in even looking at who Jesus was. But for a reason I'll come to later on, I found that it's actually through the life, death, and in particular the resurrection of Jesus, that I came to believe that there is a God. So what is the evidence? How do we know, for example, that Jesus even existed? The answer is there's a great deal of evidence. First of all, outside the New Testament, the Roman historian Tacitus talks directly about Jesus. The Roman historian Suetonius talks indirectly about him. The first century Jewish historian, Flavius Josephus, says this. He's talking about Pilate, Pontius Pilate, and he says, "Now there was about this time Jesus, a wise man, if it's lawful to call him a man, for he was a doer of wonderful works, a teacher of such men as received the truth with pleasure. He drew over to him both many of the Jews and many of the Gentiles." And then he goes on to talk about his crucifixion and his alleged resurrection. So there's evidence outside the New Testament that Jesus existed. But more important, there's evidence inside the New Testament. Some say, well, the New Testament was written a very long time ago. How do we know that what they wrote has not been changed over the years? And the answer is we do know very accurately through the science of textual criticism what the original writers wrote. And essentially, the more manuscripts we have and the earlier they are, the less doubt there is about the original. So, let's compare other ancient texts. You'll see there in the manual various other historical texts. So, for example, you'll see Herodotus and Thucydides were both written in the 5th century BC. The earliest copy that we have is AD 900. There's a 1300-year time lapse, and we have 8 copies of each. Tacitus, there's a 1,000-year time gap. We have 20 copies. Caesar's Gallic War, 950 years, 9 to 10 copies. Livy's Roman History, a 900-year gap, 20 copies. When it comes to the New Testament was written between 40 and 100 AD. We have manuscript evidence as early as AD 130 and full manuscripts by AD 350. And we have 5,309 Greek manuscripts, 10,000 Latin, and 9,300 others. So, one of the greatest textual critics ever, F.J.A. Hort, said this: "In the variety and fullness of the evidence on which it rests, the text of the New Testament stands absolutely and unapproachably alone amongst ancient prose writings." And no secular historian would disagree with that conclusion. Sir Frederick Kenyon, who's an expert in this field, says that sums it up like this: "The interval then between the dates of original composition and the earliest extant evidence becomes so small as to be in fact negligible, and the last foundation for any doubt that the scriptures have come down to us substantially as they were written has now been removed. Both the authenticity and the general integrity of the books of the New Testament may be regarded as finally established." So, we know from evidence outside and inside the New Testament that he existed, but who is he? We know he was fully human. He had a human body. He ate, he drank, he sweated, he got tired, he suffered pain. He had human emotions, love, joy, sadness. Had human experiences. He had the experience of growing up in a family, of education, of having a job, of being tempted. Bereavement, suffering, being tortured, and experience of death. Many today would say, okay, he was a human being, but only a human being, albeit maybe he was a great religious teacher. So, for example, Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code suggests Jesus was not the Son of God. He was a mortal prophet, a great and powerful man of staggering influence, a great religious teacher, but not the Son of God. On the other hand, Bono, lead singer of U2, says this: "I believe that Jesus is the Son of God. I do believe it, odd as it sounds." So that's the issue. What evidence is there to suggest that Jesus was more than just a great religious teacher. Would you like to turn to Matthew chapter 16, verse 13? When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" Son of Man was Jesus' favorite way of referring to himself. "Who do people say I am?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, others say Jeremiah or one of the prophets." In other words, people are saying, "You're a great religious teacher." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You're the Christ, the Son of the living God." It's possible to be with someone for a long time and not realize who they are. I love playing squash, and I play squash pretty regularly, but at the squash club that I belong to, there's also a gym, and sometimes if there's no one to play squash with, I go into the gym. Some time ago, I went into the gym, and I was doing some weights there, there was a great big guy, who actually I didn't realize who he was. His name is Paul Ackford. He was an England rugby international, ex-policeman, weighs about 230 pounds, I was doing weights with him. He was lifting huge weights. I was lifting puny little weights. But afterwards, we were chatting in the changing rooms upstairs, and I was trying to make polite conversation. So I said, "Do you do any other sport?" I meant apart from weightlifting. I think he assumed that I must know that he played rugby, so he said, "Yeah," he said, "I play a bit of squash." So I said, "Oh, is squash your main sport?" He said, "No," he said, "I play rugby." So I said, "Oh, really, do you play for a club?" He said, "Yeah," he said, "Harlequins." So I said, "Oh, Harlequins, I've heard of them, they're rather good, aren't they?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Don't they have some England players playing for them?" He said, "Yeah, five." So I said, "Have you ever played for England?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "When did you last play for England?" He said, "2 weeks ago in the World Cup." And I looked at him, I said, "You're Paul Ackford." I'd been with him all that time, and I hadn't realized who he was. And the disciples looked at Jesus and they said, "You're the Christ, the Son of the living God." Now the question is, were they right? What is the evidence? There are two parts to this argument, really, because the first part is who did Jesus think he was? Because if Jesus didn't think he was anything more than a human being, a great religious teacher, that's the end of the argument. And some people say Jesus never claimed to be God. And it's true, he didn't go around with a t-shirt saying, "I am God." But when you look at everything he taught and said, I think there's little doubt he was conscious of being a man whose identity was God. So that's the first part of the argument. Secondly, was he right? What evidence is there to support his claims? So let's look at the first part of the argument. What did he say about himself? And there are three pieces of evidence. First of all, his teaching centered on himself. Most great religious teachers, they point away from themselves. They say, "Don't look at me, look at God." Jesus, who was the most humble and self-effacing person who ever lived, in pointing people to God, pointed to himself. He said, "It's through me that you come into a relationship with God." We all have a kind of what you might describe a spiritual hunger. Three 20th century psychologists all recognize this. Freud said, "People are hungry for love." Jung, "People are hungry for security." Adler, "People are hungry for significance." Jesus said, "I'm the bread of life." In other words, if you want that spiritual hunger satisfied, come to me. Addiction is a major problem in our society. Jesus said, "If the Son sets you free, if Jesus sets you free, you will be free indeed." Many people are depressed, disillusioned, in despair. They're in a dark place. Jesus said, "I'm the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." for me, it was as if I was kind of staggering around in a dark room. And the moment I experienced a relationship with God through Jesus, it was as if a light had been switched on and I could see. I remember also before I was a Christian, death was something that I kind of avoided thinking about. I sort of always pushed it to the back of my mind because I suppose I was afraid. And we live in a society now where it's not really even politically correct to use the word death. But the fact is, we die. And Jesus said, "I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me will live, even though they die." Mother Teresa was asked shortly before her death, "Are you at all afraid of dying?" And she said, "How can I be? Dying is going home to God. I've never been afraid." "No, on the contrary," she said, "I'm really looking forward to it." I think most people recognize, don't they, that materialism can in itself never satisfy. And people are looking for some kind of spiritual reality. Jesus said, "I'm the way." People are looking for values on which to base their lives. Jesus said, "I'm the truth." I think all of us want some ultimate meaning, purpose to our lives. Jesus said, "I'm the life." Other people said, "That's the way. That's truth. That's life." Jesus said, "I'm the way and the truth and the life." He said, "If you receive me, you receive God. If you welcome me, you welcome God." He said, "If you have seen me, you have seen God." I heard about a 5-year-old child who was drawing a picture. And mother said, what are you doing? Child said, "I'm drawing a picture of God." So mother said, don't be silly, you can't draw a picture of God. Nobody knows what God looks like. Child said, "Well, they will do when I finish my picture." Jesus said, "If you want to know what God looks like, look at me." Second piece of evidence is a kind of indirect piece of evidence. Jesus said a number of things which, although they weren't direct claims to be God, show that he regarded himself as being in the same position as God. Take one example. Jesus said to people, "Your sins are forgiven." To forgive those who've sinned against us is something that we can all do. But to forgive those who've sinned against others is something only God can do. Third piece of evidence is his direct claims, if you like. Would you like to turn in your Bibles to John chapter 20, verse 26? John chapter 20, verse 26. This is after the resurrection. Jesus appeared to a group of the disciples, but Thomas was not there. And when these disciples, who were friends of Thomas, said to him, "Thomas, we've seen Jesus risen from the dead," Thomas said, "Uh-uh, I'm not going to believe that. I'll only believe if I can actually see the nail marks in his hands and actually put my finger in his side." And then we pick up the story at the end of verse 26. Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here, see my hands, reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Thomas called him God. And Jesus didn't say, "Hey, hang on a second, that's going too far." What he said to him, well, you'd be a bit slow to get the point. He says, then Jesus said to him, "Because you've seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." If you only had time, if somebody says to you, "Jesus never claimed to be God," and you only had time to show them one verse, I don't recommend doing it on one verse, but if you only had time, I would suggest showing them John chapter 10, verse 30 to 33. The background is that a claim tantamount to a claim to be God was blasphemy in the eyes of the religious leaders, and it was worthy of death by stoning. And Jesus says this, verse 30, I and the Father are one. Again, they picked up stones to stone him. Then Jesus said to them, I have shown you many great miracles from the Father. For which of these do you stone me? We're not stoning you for any of these, they replied, but for blasphemy, because you, a mere human being, claim to be God. So that's the first part of the argument. What did Jesus say about himself? Obviously, claims like these need to be tested, because all kind of people claim to be all kinds of things. There are people who say they're Elvis Presley, resurrected from the dead. How do we test such people's claims?
Well, tomorrow we'll learn about testing Jesus' claims of who he is and what he said about himself, along with examining what evidence is there to support what he said, his teaching, his words, his character, his fulfillment of Old Testament prophecies, his conquest of death, along with evidence for the resurrection, and so much more. So I hope you can join me again at the same time tomorrow for the Tuesday edition of Mark and Friends. If you're pondering that question, who is Jesus, and you'd like to talk to a trained counselor free of charge, dial 1-888-NEED-HIM. That's 1-888-NEED-HIM. And they would love to talk with you about having a relationship with God and who is, in fact, this Jesus. To find out more about the Alpha Course and how you can utilize materials in your church, home, or small group, log on to alphausa.org, alphausa.org. Thank you for listening to this Alpha Talk entitled, Who is Jesus? And this broadcast is not Alpha in its entirety, as Alpha is a series of interactive sessions exploring the Christian faith, typically including food, a small talk, and discussion in small groups where you can share your thoughts. And today's broadcast on Great News Radio was produced by Alpha International, copyright Alpha International 2014, and the Who is Jesus is the Alpha Course 2007. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you and have a great day and night.